Benvenuti Tifosi Napolitani to another edition of the Far From Vesuvius podcast. This is the Maradona Era Chronicle.
Mario, vengo da te allora Mario per sapere se ci sono ulteriori aggiornamenti dall'Argentina.
Buonasera Vanessa, perché ovviamente anche noi siamo messi al lavoro per verificare questa notizia e dalle verifiche che abbiamo fatto in questi minuti ci arrivano delle conferme dirette anche a noi. Diego Armando Maradona è morto per un attacco cardiorespiratorio, dunque le condizioni si erano aggravate nelle ultime ore e purtroppo poi l'ex Pibe de Oro non ce l'ha fatta e dunque vi confermiamo che Diego Armando Maradona è morto. Quindi le notizie che arrivano dall'Argentina hanno trovato un riscontro.
Firmato, murió Diego Armando Maradona.
No. Bueno, nunca pensé que iba a dar esta noticia en vivo.
Tan joven.
Al aire, nunca pensé que iba a dar esta noticia. Y la noticia dice que efectivamente murió Diego Armando Maradona a los 60 años de edad. Sufrió un paro cardiorrespiratorio en la casa de Tigre, en la que se había instalado tras operación en la cabeza. Dice, y un día ocurrió. Lo inevitable sucedió, un cachetazo emocional, nacional, un golpe que retumba en todas las latitudes, un impacto mundial, una noticia que marca una bisagra en la historia, la sentencia que varias veces escribió, pero que había sido gambeteada por el destino, ahora es parte de la triste realidad, murió Diego Armando Maradona. Es lo que dice... Lo que ya están diciendo todos.
Three weeks have passed now since the passing of the greatest of all time, Diego Armando Maradona. We at Far From Vesuvius felt that pretty deeply. He meant a lot to us, and we just thought that it would be the right thing to do to wait a little bit to start putting out shows to pay tribute to him. We really wanted to get this right. We wanted to work hard on it. You know, Frank and I have been doing this Maradona Era Chronicle for quite some time. We started it over the lockdown. We thought we'd have it done a lot sooner than we did. When things started reopening, we kind of put a halt to the project, but ironically enough, we were able to get together to resume, and we left off at 87, 88, the year that we lost the Scudetto to Milan, and we were going to restart 88, 89, and it's been quite a journey in trying to get that episode off and running. We recorded one with us and Ken. That one got lost. It was a 3-hour show, and we decided to redo it. Frank and I finally set a date to get it together, and we decided to record it in two parts. Part one being the Copa UEFA and that run, and then we would do part two for Serie A and Copa Italia, do more of a breakdown of the season. You know, we wanted to have the Copa UEFA victory to have its own kind of, you know, celebratory part. And ironically enough, part two, we were to record on the day of Maradona's passing. The reason it didn't happen was it was the day before Thanksgiving. I realized I had to go into work, and I had canceled it on Frank, or postponed it anyway, and that was the day Maradona passed away. That was November 25th, 2020. So when we present this to you, you'll hear us say, we'll be back next week, but that would never come. And we decided to wait to post that because we thought that it would be nice for Frank and I to get some words in. So Frank recorded a few minutes of his thoughts on the passing of Maradona. You'll hear that next, and then you'll hear our show. And in our show, like I said, it's a week before he passes away, so we have no idea what's going to happen. We had no idea we'd be on here to essentially eulogize Diego Maradona. But that's how it happens. And then I'm going to add at the end my words about Diego. This is something that I recorded the night he passed away. It's very emotional. It's very heartfelt. And I do appreciate you listening. And yeah, hey, you know, we today are on the heels of Napoli qualifying for the round of 32 in the Europa League. They drew Granada, and we have a legitimate chance, and I think we're taking this competition as serious as possible, especially with the death of Maradona, and especially this being the trophy that he won and that meant so much to him as a Napoli player. I think it'd only be fitting that Napoli go all out for this trophy in honor of Diego. But anyway, here's Frank Sidekick with his words, once again, followed by our 1988-89 tribute to the UEFA Cup, and then a closeout with my words. However, be on the lookout as well for another episode, another tribute episode to Diego Maradona, with the rest of the cast and crew of Far From Vesuvius, some of our friends, some of our family. We're putting this together, so please bear with us. We didn't want to rush out a tribute. We want to get this absolutely right for you guys, the listeners. And now I'll send you over to Frank Sidekick, and I really hope you enjoy the rest of this show. Forza Diego, Forza Napoli sempre.
Napoli is a club in mourning tonight, a match overshadowed this week by the death of Diego Maradona. On a night of tributes to an outstanding player,
Napoli piange il suo eroe, il suo condottiero capace di portare la città partenopea sul tetto d'Italia ed Europa. È come se fosse scomparso un parente, uno di famiglia. E l'amore dei partenopei e del mondo del calcio per il Pibe de Oro.
Ciao ragazzi, it's Frank here. Yeah, so Rafa asked me to just record some thoughts about the passing of Diego Maradona before this podcast. And, you know, when we recorded the show you're about to listen to, that was a week before Maradona died. I'm recording this about a week after Maradona died. So, yeah, I've had a bit of time to process the whole thing, and I've looked at everyone's reactions, and it's been such an overwhelming thing. And those of you that sort of have got to know me on Twitter and have read some of the things that I've written will know that my whole involvement with Napoli as a club and me being a Napoli fan is really centered around Diego Maradona. And yeah, you know, I was a 7-year-old English boy from a family who had no interest in sport, really. And the 1990 World Cup was on, and I watched Maradona play and was very captivated by it, but then also very upset that the Argentina anthem was being booed, and then it wasn't booed in Naples, and, well, as far as I can remember. And I talked to my dad about Naples, and he explained to me about it as a city, because he was working there on and off. And so really, there's this, you know, pasty blonde kid from being brought up in Cheshire in the UK with absolutely no connection to Naples as a city and Napoli as a club. And through this guy, this huge icon, my life changed. He genuinely changed my life, Maradona. And I think that's something that I just like to think about with you all now, is that, and we're all very obviously devastated that he's gone, and it's very sad. But I think that, you know, I'm not arrogant enough to suggest that I know what happens when we die and what goes on. You know, as someone once wrote, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. And so, but what I do know and what I believe in is that there is a sort of collective afterlife, that people do live on in other people. And I think of the people that I've lost in my life, my, you know, in my family and my friends, and I think of actually how much of my ridiculous personality I owe to them, and they live on in me. You know, and it's a really beautiful thing when you think about it. Shakespeare wrote in The Tempest, Prospero says, "We are such stuff as dreams are made on." And that for me is about how we do live on in each other. And there are people that we've all lost and we dream about them, but we also respond to certain situations because of their influence. We're interested in certain things because of their influence. And there's this sort of beautiful network of connection that in some ways I live my ancestors that go back hundreds of years to a small island in Scotland called Isla. I've never met any of these people, but through the kind of lineage of their experience, they, you know, they'll influence someone who influences someone who influences someone who influences me. And I'm connected to those people. And we're connected to everyone that's touched us. And when they die, they don't, that connection doesn't stop, does it? It lives on in us. And you think of Maradona and you think of all those connections, all those people whose lives he changed, all the players he played with, he changed them, all the people watching him, the fans, not just as a footballer, but as an icon. And now's not the time to talk about the people whose lives he destroyed as well, and he did. Let's just think about him as a footballer. And it's huge. And think, you know, I have 700 odd followers on Twitter. I've never met any of you, and yet you're actually a big part of my life. And I think of the journey, and Rafa, the journey that we've been on with these podcasts, and the fact that I know you, and we've spent hours together, and we, you know, the Scudetto podcast, when you were very rightly emotional about that, that's something that we shared. That was a great experience that I'll always cherish. And I'm really so pleased that we were doing these things about Maradona. But that's because of Maradona, you know, and it's huge. And so his impact doesn't just stop now. And Messi says that he's eternal, and he is. And I suppose these things all seem quite grand, don't they, and abstract and hard to understand. But for me, the big thing is that he has connected himself to so millions of people. And he's also connected people together. And I think that's the thing to think about. And the other thing, just him as a player, is that in my real life, I'm an academic, and I write academic books, and I go to conferences and I give papers. And one of the things that I'm really interested in is skill. And I was giving a paper about skill development in young people in relation to performance at a conference, right? And I used Maradona's chip or lob, or whatever you want to call it, against Lazio for us. And I'm not going to go into detail about it, don't worry everybody. But I got a question from someone afterwards that said, well, because really what I was saying, and it comes from a philosopher called Hubert Dreyfus, but that really greatness, genius in terms of skill development, isn't just about following the rules. It's about improvising, making things up to a point where you change the rules, like you change the game. And I think Maradona is a great example of that. Anyway, so I got this question saying, from this guy saying, well, hang on, you know, what's to say that another player wouldn't have made that decision? And that Maradona's actually just, you know, going through a series of options in his head, and he's chosen that one. And I thought, you just don't get it, man. Like, you really, like, and I said to him, look, 900,999 people would have been in that situation and not done what Maradona did, partly because they couldn't, but also partly because they wouldn't have thought to. And that for me is what Maradona does, is that he is a genius. He was a genius because he went beyond the rules. He changed the game. He saw the game in a way. He made the game work for him, not the other way around. And he always did that. And he changed it. Like, the football was not, will never be the same because of Maradona. And I think that those two thoughts are connected. And I think his legacy will live on for hundreds of years. And there'll be people playing football in 200-300 years' time. And they may not even have heard of Maradona, but he would have had an influence on them because of what he did in his career as a footballer. And that, for me, is the big thing, I think, to take away from that. And how lucky we have been to have such a player play for our team. And it's also really sad, and I just think back to the kid in the documentary, that little boy with that just drive and desire and ambition. But he was also a little boy and a very vulnerable kid, and you look at that, and then you look at the guy in the World Cup in 2018, and people found it funny and stuff. I found it really just so sad to see, you know, that. And I think, you know, and there's a lot of positives, and we've got to think about the bigger picture, but it's also really sad, isn't it? 60's too young for anyone, man. But anyway, that's, I don't know. I hope these thoughts are interesting or useful or whatever, but I'm absolutely devastated by it. And, you know, the good thing is that it seems to have really brought us all together. So anyway, I hope you enjoy this podcast. It was recorded quite quickly. I had a little bit of time, but I think it's a great tribute to him to focus on that UEFA Cup campaign. Let's just think about him as a player. And as we continue the series, as we're going to, when we get towards the end, I think we can look at some of the other stuff. But it's a fitting tribute in that this campaign, he was such a team player. He was a great captain. And people don't give him credit enough that he thought about other players just as much as he thought about himself. And I think, you know, the UEFA campaign, you see that, the amount of assists, you know, how he was lifting that trophy. Yeah, it's a beautiful campaign, and I hope you enjoy it. Actually, there is one last thing. Just thinking about everything, and again, I don't know if this is useful to anyone, but you know, when these big things happen, I think one tends to turn to the people and the voices and the things that help us make sense of things. And, you know, one of my favourite writers is from Italy, was from Italy, a guy called Italo Calvino. Many of you will have heard of him, but if you haven't, you know, investigate him. But one of his most enjoyable books that he wrote, actually it's not a work of fiction, it's called Why Read the Classics. And in this book, he's looking at what makes a classic work of literature, or what makes a classic work of art. And I think, I think that Maradona was a classic in that sense. He's like a classic film, he's like a classic novel, something that sort of transcends time and place. And I think there's two quotes, I think, from this book, two of the criteria for making a classic that really speaks to me about Maradona. See, this is what Calvino says: your classic is a book to which you cannot remain indifferent, and which helps you define yourself in relation or even in opposition to it. In fact, actually, that's just the one I've got to concentrate on, and that is Maradona in a nutshell. If you've seen the man on the pitch, you cannot remain indifferent to that talent, to that, what was it that the Argentinian commentator described him as? It was like an extraterrestrial object. You cannot remain indifferent to that. And I think that, which helps you define yourself in relation or even in opposition to it. I think that's important for people who are trying to make sense of how this Maradona as a flawed person can still be an inspiration to people. And I think, you know, one of my favourite podcasts is the Stadio podcast, and Musa and Ryan on it have talked about how Messi in some ways has defined how he lives his life in opposition, I would say, to Maradona, that in some ways Maradona's life enabled Messi to live in a different way, to focus on things differently. You know, and without Maradona, Messi, I think, has a very different kind of life. And that's from Calvino. And I suppose, okay, the 12th. A classic is a work that comes before other classics, but those who have read the other classics first immediately recognize its place in the genealogy of classic works. So that's something you spot. And I think there'll be people listening to this that weren't alive when Maradona was at his peak. But I think when you watch him play, you watch his highlights, you watch some of his goals, you watch that amazing warm-up that he did. I mean, talk about doing things on your own terms. Before the semi-final second leg, you'll recognise, you know, and you can see Maradona and you can place him in the kind of genealogy, like the family tree of the great players. So I think again, it links back to what Messi said about Maradona being eternal, that he is like a classic work of literature, a classic film. These things that are going to live, you know, forever in people's lives, in people's imaginations, in people's dreams, and all that stuff. So that's just a little thing from Italo Calvino. Yeah. All right. I'm going to sign out now. Forza Napoli sempre.
Benvenuti tifosi napoletani to a very special edition of the Far From Vesuvius podcast. We are here to continue the Maradona era chronicles, and this time we come at you with season 1988-89, and as always, I can't do this without my partner in crime, Frank Sidekick over in jolly good England. Frank, how are you doing?
I'm peachy, Rafa. It's always a pleasure to speak to you. Always a pleasure. A pleasure. To speak Napoli, and this season, I mean, we got very emotional, didn't we, about the first Scudetto, but there's something about this season that's on a pure footballing level that is just absolute gold dust, so I can't wait to get cracking with this. How about you, man?
Yeah, same here, especially on the heels of like you mentioned, our first Scudetto, our Coppa Italia, and then the collapse of last season in 87-88. You know, five matches to go, and a loss to...
Don't remind me, man.
Well, I mean, it should be... We should refresh everybody that Napoli lost out on the Scudetto with very few matches left in the season. It started revolt, I guess, with some of the players, Bagni, Garella, Giordano, Ferrario, you know, Bruscolotti is retired at this point, but, you know, so what we're going to do here is, because there's so much to talk about and we don't have that much time, is we're going to split this into two parts. This part, we're going to talk about our UEFA Cup run of the 1988-89 season. And then part two, we'll go a little deeper into Serie A season and Coppa Italia, because, quite frankly, we still impressed, even though we didn't win those two competitions. It was still impressive, and it was still worthy to speak about. A lot of things happened, a lot of really good goals, a lot of really good situations. But it's just too much to talk about, because we go pretty far into this UEFA Cup run, don't we, Frank?
Yeah, we don't give any spoilers away, though, do we, Rafa? But we might be talking about quite a lot of games. I just want to back up the league and cup stuff that you're saying. I think we both agree that it might be our favourite week in the history of Napoli. is in the league. Two very good results against two of our oldest enemies. So watch this space for episode two, because it definitely will be worth it. Rafa, before we dive into the first game of our UEFA Cup campaign, do you think it's worth briefly just talking about the status of the UEFA Cup back in 1988? Because I think for a lot of people listening who are maybe a bit younger than us, they maybe think about the Europa League, and which is a great competition, but really the UEFA Cup back in 88 was a really high prestige competition, wasn't it?
It was. Back in the 80s and early 90s, the Champions League, which is what it is now, was back then was the European Champions Cup, you know, the champions of your domestic league were allowed in that competition, and the reigning champions. So it's like, you know, every year you'd have one country with two clubs if that country won a European Cup but didn't win their domestic league, you know. So basically the UEFA Cup being the secondary European competition consisted of teams that today would be in the Champions League all throughout the competition. You know, now, like you said, the Europa League today is a pretty, you know, it's a prestigious competition. It's a European trophy, you know, when you come down to it. But really in the later stages of the Europa League today is when, like, the meatier part of the tournament comes around, where all the, like, the cream rises to the top towards the end of the competition here. Here, you've got teams that finish from two to, like, you know, depending on what country is ranked where, but two to five. Yeah. And it's definitely similar to the Champions League of today, for sure. So winning a competition like that was a big deal. There was also the Cup Winners' Cup, too, was a pretty big deal as well, because only the Cup winners get into that, too. But, you know, the European competitions seemed a little more, you know, obviously the Champions League of today, everybody wants to win a Champions League and it's very prestigious, but all three of those competitions seemed a little bit more prestigious back then as compared to today, right, Frank?
Yeah, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Napoli fan, but you could argue that in some years it was harder to win the UEFA Cup than it was to win the European Cup. And you just have to look at the quality of teams that are in the competition over the course of this season. You'll hear us describing games against some really big European superpowers. And just to plug it, someone that I don't know, and I've listened to a podcast that was promoting this book that's just come out, he's a English writer called Stephen Scragg. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter. He's a really interesting guy, and he's written a book about the UEFA Cup and this period, which is called, I think, Where the Cool Kids Hung Out. And I think, I mean, I haven't read the book. I've got it ordered. I'm going to read it soon. But I think what that really demonstrates is that this is a competition that was unique, hard to win, full of gold dust, glittering super clubs, to the point that you got people writing books about this period as well. So I think, and also we've watched the games, haven't we, Raf? You can see it on the pitch as well, can't you? And you can see it in the atmosphere in the stadiums as well, right? So, which we'll be talking about. But I just thought that was worth us just kind of saying before we get into it. But should we talk about the first game and this new Napoli team?
We absolutely should, yes. So the UEFA Cup, I went to call it the Europa League, the UEFA Cup began in the preliminary stages in September of 1988, September 7th, and this actually prompted the Serie A to start late. We'll talk about that next week. We have a revamp of the competitions, but we'll talk more about that next week. But we end up playing in the preliminary stage of the UEFA Cup before we play a single Serie A season match, and the first match is against PAOK Salonika.
Yeah, I think so. PAOK, that's how you pronounce it, yeah.
Yes, PAOK Salonika, at home at the São Paulo. And our first match is a 1-0 victory at the São Paulo on a Diego Maradona penalty kick.
Sure. And if you look at the highlights of this match, and again, they're all there on YouTube, everyone listening to, please do listen along and press play or whatever. But the thing you'll notice is that we've got five new players in from last season, right, Rafa? And you mentioned at the top some of the internal politics of the club, and we talked about on the last podcast the dressing room revolt and the letter that was signed by Bagni, Garella, Ferrario, and Giordano, right? And yes. none of those four players are in the lineup because they've been sold in pre-season. So we've got five new players. We've got Giuliani in goal, Corradini in defence, Alamao in midfield, Crippa in midfield, and Fusi as a forward in this. He plays all over the team over the course of the season. But what do you think about that then? This massive rebrand, rethink of the club.
Well, what I think about it is that it worked out, you know? I mean, we basically replaced every player with a very strong player. We did a good job in doing that. And yeah, I mean, Giuliani was a goalkeeper that was also with Verona, like Garella, and, you know, fared very well there as well. He was actually Garella's replacement at Verona, so that's kind of weird how we set up our goalkeeping around the Verona base there. You know, Corradini came in and was very instrumental in the season. Alemão, obviously, Alemão was one of the more important signings of, you know, of this tenure here. Crippa does a lot of good stuff and actually stays for a few years after the Maradona, you know, era. And, you know, Fusi too, you know, and they really did stand out as great replacements for the players that were leaving. Don't forget, like I mentioned earlier, Bruscolotti would retire as well. So, yeah. You know, Napoli does a good job in replacing them.
And who's the guy in charge of this? I mean, are we allowed to mention his name? It's such a dirty word.
That's the thing, is that it was such a great move, but, you know, the irony of the fact that it's Luciano Moggi that is the one to get everything together is... I mean, quite astounding. 10 years later, we know where that... 20 years later, as a matter of fact, we know where that would end up, you know?
Exactly, and I know this is a Napoli podcast, and we are partisan, and that's fine, and he's a despicable person, and represents so much that's wrong with Italian football, and still is wrong with Italian football. But you do have to give him his props here. You know, my notes on this game is that this does not look like a new team. You know, we play fantastic football here. Everything gels. The real focus for me is you got Maradona playing deeper, and this is what you'll see over the course of the season, and that chemistry between him and Carreca, which we talked about as part of Magica last podcast for last season. But really, let's just focus on those two. One of the greatest strike partnerships of all time, and you see that now. And Carreca's a bit more of a focal point this season. He's wearing the number 9, but the penalty itself comes from one of the great heroes of the season for me, Alessandro Orenica, our sweeper who likes to bring the ball out of defense. You know, he feeds Maradona, he takes it forward, he plays in Carreca, and Carreca's fouled in the box, and that's where the penalty comes from. And really, that spine of the team, those three players, Renica, Maradona and Carreca, there are sort of three main heroes, I'd say, of the season. So it's quite a in our European campaign, I think it's quite a fitting way to start things. So we end up winning that game 1-0, and again, a rocking atmosphere at the old San Paolo, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The San Paolo has come back alive. You know, I think the new players coming in brought an energy, or not brought an energy, but retained the energy that we had from the seasons past. And like you said, yeah, the foul that led up to the Maradona penalty kick was just, you know, it's just like a taste of what you're going to see for the rest of the season here. And it was a really good way to show the fans that this is what we have in store for you guys, you know. But we do win that match 1-0 at home. The away fixture would come about a month later in October, October 6th. a 1-1 finish there. Careca would get our goal. Scartados would get a goal for PAOK. And they put us under pressure a little early, didn't they, Frank?
Yeah, and I think, again, it speaks to the quality of the competition. That this is not an easy fixture. We've only got a 1-0 lead going into it. And this, for me, is another really important story this season, is the combination at the back of Reneke and Ferrara. Ciro Ferrara, one of the great legends of the club. And, you know, we talked about this privately, haven't we, Rafa, thinking about what's the greatest defensive combination in Napoli history. I think Reneke Ferrara is a really good shout. You've got Reneke, who can play the ball out from the back and distribute, and you've got Ferrara's excellent marker, pace and strength. And that really holds us together in those opening moments when we're put under pressure. And this is Ferrara's mostly playing as a centre-back this season, and that's kind of the first time that he's consistently been there, hasn't he? He's played a bit as right-back and a bit all over the place because he's been quite young. But I think this is his season where he really arrives as a Napoli player.
I agree. Very young as well. You know, he was a youth player in the team. He started his professional career at, I believe it was age 18, and by now he's 20, and I think they found, you know, they found a Bianchi, credit to Bianchi there too. You know, Bianchi found the fact that Ferrara is probably a better fit at center back, and he moves him over there with Reneke, and yeah, one of the better defensive combinations there as well. Yes, absolutely.
So the goal, again, I've talked about the Maradona-Careca chemistry, but the and it's a shame that this season is pre-assist stats, because I think Maradona, we'll probably talk a bit more about his the fact he hasn't scored that many goals in next week's pod, but I think he'd have a very, very large amount of assists this season, and he does this beautiful lofted through ball, yeah, Careca hits it on the bounce into the left-hand corner. It's a really lovely goal. It speaks volumes about Careca. And I think I said this last time round, I can just see so much of Cavani in Careca. Don't you think? The sort of power he can get into his shots.
Oh, absolutely. Careca was a pure striker. He had a lot of power behind his shots. And he did really well to get to that ball. You know, he fantastic run on a great pass by Maradona, and it is a shame that we don't see assists in this era, because I think Maradona would be like up there in all of Europe.
Yeah, oh god, absolutely. And he really is, it's a masterclass in deep lying forward play all season. He's very famously a number 10. That's the shirt number he wore, obviously. That's the number that's been retired, in my mind, rightfully so, at the club. And I think this is the season where he plays most as a pure 10 for us. And there's several chances that come from Diego's creativity. There's another Careca chance where he's put through again, but that doesn't quite happen. A few chances from corners that he's taking. Reneke, again, is dangerous up front as well as at the back. There's also loads of Koulibaly, I think, in Reneke, if you're looking for modern day comparisons. He loves to run forward with the ball and get involved all over the pitch. Their goal isn't great, is it, from us, from a defensive perspective there, Rafa?
No, it was a corner kick that wasn't really dealt with properly. Giuliani was looking pretty good, but a lot of really good saves, looked a little confident, but the goal that they scored was off a corner kick that wasn't really dealt with properly. Yeah. And you know, we just kind of fell a little flat there, and luckily enough, the aggregate score was 2-0 when this goal came. You know, a little tense. I mean, you know, the atmosphere in Greece was pretty outstanding. You know, I'm sure it would be when you come see a team like Napoli and you know, speared by Maradona there. But
yeah, it really feels like we're box office, doesn't it, Rafa? Like
it sure does. Yeah,
packed stadium. Like, it's a shame they chuck things at Maradona, which is a bit naughty. And we're going to be talking about the how important that is to us next season in a couple of pods' time. Objects being thrown at people. Spoiler alert. But again, I've written in my notes here. It's like a proper European night. It really feels, it's not like, again, to emphasize, it's not Europa League. It's not, oh, we're going to turn up. It's, this is box office, main event, best player in the world playing for a really exciting team. And we get through it. So we're through to the next round. Very exciting.
That's right. We are through to the next round. And later that month, on the 26th, to be exact, of October, we would get Lokomotiv Leipzig. And our first, the first leg is away in Germany, in East Germany, and it is a 1-1 result. Franchini gets on the scoreboard for this one. So we get the away, goal that we need to get out of Germany. It looks like the Germans really attacked Maradona a lot, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, there's two things that I immediately noticed. One is relevant to you, is the sheer amount of mullets that are on the pitch. The hair is like every stereotype you want to make about 1980s Germany is incredible. And so you've got these kind of mulleted German, East German players absolutely kicking the shit out of Maradona, pardon my French. And again, as what we talked about this before, but Maradona gets up and gets on with it. And the whole Maradona or Messi debate, and I know you've been on podcasts talking about this, Rafa, one of the things to bear in mind is just the treatment he was dished out and how he still managed to do some stuff. So despite the fact he's getting kicked around, there's a beautiful dribble and shot which goes just wide. Again, I think the atmosphere, again, remember this is East Germany, this is before the fall of the Soviet Union, it would have been a big event for the city of Leipzig. The sort of colour of Napoli and the razzmatazz for the whole thing, I think, would have been a big deal, and you can hear it in the noisy stadium. But Giuliani, really, really important for us again, right?
Yes, he came up pretty big with a lot of first half saves, very, very good, and you know, it was a pretty even first half. In the second half, he made another really good save at the near post to deny Halata. And, you know, a lot of really good, you know, play by Giuliani. But they would come out first, wouldn't they, with a lead?
Yeah, and I think people look back at the season and they remember it as our great European campaign. But, you know, it nearly didn't go that way for us in a few games. And when they score, they're the better team by quite some distance. There's this hugely intimidating atmosphere. And you think they could maybe get a few more. But luckily, our keeper, Giuliani, also the most tragic story probably in the history of Napoli Football Club, which I'm sure we'll talk about on another podcast, he keeps us in it. And then we score this incredible team goal, which has that Alamal taking a free kick, Kreke, and Maradona with a 1-2, so that's that classic chemistry we've talked about. Kreke then squares it to, for my money, the greatest left-back in the history of the club, Franchini, with his great pace, and he runs into the box, and he finishes it. Modern-day comparison, people think about Jordi Alba playing for Barcelona, those sorts of goals with that sort of rampaging fullback. It's a really top-quality all-round. Back to that thing, we've replaced the spine of the team, but we're gelling fantastically well together. And to play football of that quality when you're under that much pressure is another props to our great coach, Bianchi. But I reckon a draw is a fair result.
I think so. I think it was a fair result here. We were, you know, attacked pretty well, you know, and to come out with a result away is always a good thing. You know, you get the 1-1, you get the away goal. So now you go into São Paulo a little bit more confident, which is what we did. We go into São Paulo on November 9th against Leipzig, and we come out 2-0 winners. And that man, Franchini, again, from another set piece, no?
Yeah, and who delivers it? Our assist man, the greatest footballer of all time, Diego Armando Maradona.
Couldn't have a better service into the box there. What do you think? I mean, just the way he places it, you know, he knows exactly where he's going. Franchini's right there waiting. What a wonderful goal from another header by Franchini as well. So, yeah, very good. Very good way to start the match there.
Yeah, and the atmosphere, we talked about this, that's Fortress San Paolo a few times. The flares, not the trousers, the fireworks, the but there's probably a few of those as well. You know, the smoke on the pitch, it's such a classic 1980s European night feel. Maradona's lost a bit of weight as well. He's looking a bit more up for it. And I think we need to talk a bit about Carnevale, which I'm sure, again, we'll be addressing when we talk about the league. But that front three, although we talk about Magica a lot last season, but for me, it gels even better than Magica, Carnevale, Maradona and Careca. And there's a few chances that don't quite come off. Yeah, and then the second goal comes from another Maradona set piece, right?
It does. It's an this time an own goal by I took my head away from the notes here. I forgot exactly who
Schultz.
Yes. But Maradona sends the ball into the box, which gets through the wall low, and can't make out who took the shot here. But it, as I'm watching the highlights right now, but it caroms off the keeper and goes right off of Schultz's leg and.
It's Francini, I think.
Francini. Yeah. Look at that. It is. Yeah. Just watched it again. Yeah, Francini is all over the place, isn't he? I mean, like, just really proving to be, like, one of the better defenders for us, you know? Very underrated. You don't hear his name a lot.
No, and again, he was huge in, and he stays with us for a long time. A lot of appearances. I find it very hard to see anybody else being in that all-time 11, but it's not a pretty goal, is it? But it's massive, and that's us through really, really difficult opposition, Leipzig, and we got through it.
Does get us through. I should also mention, we talk about the atmosphere at the San Paolo and the atmosphere away as well. The two San Paolo matches so far, PAOK drew 63,000, and funny enough, the match against Leipzig at the San Paolo drew 10,000 less supporters, but I think they were preparing for a trip to Turin, because that would be the next match, which we'll get to in the next part. Yes, correct. Again, we talked about a week to have, and this is it. This is the week. We start the week with a November 20th away to Juventus, but in the middle of that and a home Milan fixture, we go to Bordeaux and play against them on November 23rd in the first leg. And Bordeaux had a pretty interesting manager, didn't he?
Yeah, in fact, the most interesting thing about this game is not actually the game, but the people involved. So you've got Aimé Jacquet, who won the World Cup with France in 1998. You had Jean Tigana, the great midfielder. And you have Enzo Schifo, in the great Belgian player, in the Bordeaux side. So when I saw the lineup, I got really excited. And I watched the match, and it was just like, you know, all my prejudices about French football really came up. It was not particularly interesting game, not a great atmosphere as well. It's a bit of a damp squib. But Carnevale,
it was pretty cold that day too, wasn't it?
Oh, mate, it looks freezing, doesn't it? What our South Americans would have made it, God knows. But
well, yeah, Maradona was wearing gloves during the match, so
I love a player wearing gloves, I have to say. And so there's, you know, I think there's probably other games for us to get into a bit more detail with, but it's worth saying that there's, again, a lot of chances created by Maradona. I'm just trying to remember what the goal is. It's a sort of, is it a cross? Is it a shot sort of goal, isn't it? It's one of those sorts of things.
It looks like Carnevale is trying to send the ball in, you know, and it looks like he's trying to find a player, and he mishits it, and it goes right past the keeper and into the net.
We'll take it.
Which is great. You know, you mentioned Carnevale being instrumental after the Magica days, but for a long time, as a kid, I thought Carnevale was part of the Magica, and when you talked about Magica, it was the CA was for Carnevale. That's, as a kid, I'll never forget growing up, you know, knowing that, and then, you know, getting a little smarter to the fact that it was Giordano and Careca in the year before. But I absolutely loved Carnevale. I mean, he was big for our first Scudetto, and he was big here too, you know, and really, really nice goal. It was early in the match, and like you said, it was not too much to talk about there. So shall we roll on?
Rambo, I was briefly mentioning Rambo, De Napoli getting sent off, him and Alain Roche. They kick the hell out of each other, both get sent off. Nice one, Rambo. And then we have another, we're going to talk about this game next week, but we have a game after this, home to Milan, but we'll not worry about that.
Yeah, now, this is my favorite Napoli match in the Maradona era, is the Milan match, and I can't wait to talk about that, because just the memories for me, amazing.
Watch this space. But the next game, home to Bordeaux, slightly less to talk about, right, Rafa?
Very, very little to talk about. December 7th, Bordeaux. It was a 0-0. It was enough to get us through because of the 1-0 victory. São Paulo is packed again and full of color. And, you know, it's just a more dull match, but it was, you know, good enough for us to roll on, isn't it?
Yeah, and poor old Ciro Ferrara was denied a great goal. He's charging forward. And one of the French players, I think, Thuvenel, elbows Kripa off the ball, and the referee decides to stop play and send off Kripa rather than
at the beginning of the match too. I think it was the third minute. Yeah.
So there's quite a spicy thing
there too.
Really cool. I mean, you can really see there's all the flags and the banners and everything. It's, you know, this is definitely, there's so many games where I want to get into my time machine. I forgot, what's the name of the car in Back to the Future? It's gone.
The DeLorean.
I want to get in my DeLorean and just be at the São Paulo. So anyway, so we have a bit of a break, don't we, until we get to the next sort of the final stages-ish of the UEFA Cup, right?
Yes, we go to I believe it's the quarterfinals, isn't it, of the UEFA Cup is up next, and it is a break. It's about a 4-month break. We roll into March of 1989, and our opponents are the dastardly Juventus, our compatriots.
Box office. I mean, it's, you know, there are some big teams that we've had to beat so far, but then it gets bigger, and we're playing in one of my favorite kits, which is our red kit, and we're away, and we're in Turin, and it's not... it's not a classic Juve team. It's managed by Dino Zoff, so there's a bit of intrigue there. He obviously played for us and them. But it's not a wonderful performance. I think we're missing a few players. There's no Di Napoli in midfield. I don't know why, but Romano can't seem to get into the team this season. They score a really good goal.
Yeah, they do. They do. They score a pretty good goal. You know, I think it was ruled in a Corradini own goal, but they get a good goal. Romano was instrumental in our, you know, earlier seasons, wasn't he? He can't really get into this one.
Yeah, it's a shame. He was a nice player, I think, but who knows what was going on. And their second goal's good as well, outside the box. Atmosphere is huge again. Obviously, this competition means a massive amount to both teams, both fans, both sets of tifosi. The defending isn't great from us. Francini gets beaten a few times. Corradini at right back, another underrated player. Corradini at right back, excellent, one of our best right backs. We have a few chances, but we're a bit flat, aren't we? And it's a shame to end up losing 2-0, right?
We do lose 2-0. The goal that you were referring to was a Bruno goal, though. The second goal would be the Corradini goal. And yeah, so 2-0 to Juventus in Turin. So this was an away match for us. A month later, April 2nd, Napoli-Juventus at the Stadio San... No, I'm sorry. We're talking... looking at the Serie A fixture. The 3rd, yes. The March 15th, I'm sorry. That's where we are. So it's only a couple of weeks later. Because Napoli did play Juventus again a few weeks after this match. But, yeah, the 3-0 victory at the São Paulo, you know, what a match like, if you have to pick one match from this entire season in any competition, this is definitely the one to watch. I mean, you know, such an atmosphere, 80,000 at the San Paolo. The pitch is all smoky, flares and fireworks going off before the match, and Juve players really caught, you know, the wrath of the fans whenever they touched the ball, didn't they, Frank?
Yeah, and I think I actually the DeLorean is going back here for me. I think maybe out of all the games of this entire podcast series, it would be great to be there when we won the first Scudetto, but I think this is the best atmosphere I've ever seen or heard at the San Paolo, ever. It's absolutely incredible. You have to just, even if you just watch the highlights just to hear the crowd and see the crowd. And the TV directors do a really good job of cutting to the crowd, and you see the sheer scale of San Paolo and the people and the sea of... And again, it's very rare that you see an opposition team be completely kowtowed by the home fans. And you see it, don't you, Rafa? They're like a rabbit in the headlights, you know. I mean,
yeah, they really are. Yeah. I mean, when you really think about it, Juve going into a European fixture with a 2-0 lead, you know, should really seal any kind of deal there, you know. And I think that the San Paolo coming alive was such a factor in, you know, it's a fortress. It's bone chilling when the fans are, you know, at their highest interest and at their, you know, at their best. You know, it's very, you know, scary for players to go there and play against Napoli when...
And referees, maybe.
The referees as well.
The first goal is soft as hell, man. I mean, Carreca goes down and it's just a, like, very lightly tugged shirt. And it's a penalty, and Maradona sends the keeper the other way. And that's about 10 minutes in, isn't it? So suddenly, the whole team, the whole crowd, everyone is willing us forward. And then a little bit further on, I'm just trying to think how, the exact minute this happens, but the second goal we score is the loudest roar I think I've ever heard at the San Paolo.
Yeah, it was very late in regulation. It was late in the first half. It was in the 40th minute, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So, Nibali's goal from outside the box, just a massive moment, because now you're going into the second half tied 2-2 on aggregate. Yeah. You know, honors are even here, and it's game on, isn't it?
Yeah, and you have to give Alamao's props. Really, really good player. I know, Ken, you're listening, man, one of your favourite players. But then the second half is super edgy, isn't it? And it ends up going to extra time, and nothing really happens in extra time. And then we get into the last minute of extra time, don't we, Rafa? And there's a corner. What happens next?
There is a corner. This definitely has, for younger Italian fans, this has a very Italy-Germany semifinal 2006 feel to it, where, you know, there's no time left. You know, we're looking at penalty kicks, and corner kick ensues, and from that corner kick comes one of the most special goals I think I'll ever see in a Napoli jersey, and from Rannica, Ken's man, our new boy. Cross comes in, and Rannica goes low to head it right past the keeper, and with no time left, Napoli are leading 3-2 on aggregate, 3-0 on the night. Quarterfinals of the UEFA Cup. This is going to send us to the semifinals, our very first semifinal. Am I right there? Is that our very first semifinal in Europe?
I'm willing to say yes, I think so. But,
I think
if there's someone listening disagrees, you're welcome to tell us politely on Twitter. Again, we could spend like 5 podcasts talking about this game, but I just, you know, please look up the highlights. We beat Juve 3-0 at home to overturn a 2-0 deficit from the first leg. And there's a great camera shot that just pans across the whole curva just after that goal from Rannica, which really, it's a football cliche, but Rannica just throws himself at that cross. It's like all of his body, mind and soul goes into connecting with that ball and into the back of the net. It's just, yeah, wonderful. So we're into the semis, right? We're at home in the first leg.
We're into the semis. We're home for the first leg. And it is Bayern Munich of all teams, Bayern Munich in the semifinals. We begin this match at home to Bayern, and this is the match where Careca and Maradona are doing keepy-ups before the kickoff.
And which is an underrated thing, because people think a lot about the Maradona warm-up in the next game, but this is a nice little snippet into that way of thinking, isn't it, Rafa?
Right. This isn't exactly the live is life. That comes later, but this is a really cool moment in the match. And Bayern Munich comes to the San Paolo, and it's pretty tense at the beginning. Giuliani making a pretty good save. But then what happens next?
Mr. Creator, Diego Maradona, beautiful pass through to the Careca, hits it first time, Careca into the middle of the goal with, again, Cavani-esque sort of sweetness with the power from the shot. Boom. Again, the crowd go absolutely bananas at this point.
And what a ball it was in from Maradona, too. A nice little touch, nice little, low lob. And Careca just finds it, runs it in. Like you said, Cavani-esque is true. Yes, absolutely. So that is 1-0.
Yeah, and then there's another great Maradona-created chance for... actually, it's the front three. You've got a great chance of Maradona putting it through to Careca. He puts a ball through to a diving header from Cannavale. Would have been a perfect goal, but it hits the post. That's a shame. But then we get our second, right?
We do. Second goal of the game comes in the 54th minute, and it is a goal on a head from Cannavale. The ball gets crossed in, and Cannavale just finds it. It's just like these guys. I mean, I wish we'd have these crossing ability today, don't you? Because they are just finding everyone. They are finding everybody.
It's another Maradona assist. So we're 2-0 up against one of the best teams in the world at home. Although we needed to throw it all away. Giuliani comes rushing out and gets nowhere near the ball, but luckily Corradini clears it, and we got a healthy lead going into the second leg, right? Away from home.
Yes, and in the second leg, April 19th away, Bayern Munich. That is where the live is life is. You know, it's such an iconic moment in Maradona history, and it feels to me that Napoli already know that what we're gonna hold on to this. I just have the feeling when watching it that Napoli knew that this was gonna be their day. They're gonna make it to a final. Something interesting does happen afterwards. The game stops after a minute to mark the respect for the Hillsborough disaster, which I thought was pretty classy.
I thought it was an excellent move. Yeah, and I'm broadcasting this in Sheffield, so I'm just right next to where that happened. So I think it's a really important moment, and I'm really glad that happened. I think it's quite nervy, this game, and I think that we need to give Bianchi the credit where it's due. He does some tactical fiddling around. He gets Alamayo to really join the centre-backs. He brings Maradona very, very deep. Di Napoli is a real worker here. He protects that right-hand side. But both goals are from Careca, and they both come from Maradona assists. And Maradona, in his autobiography, is very proud of that fact. It's a very significant thing for him. I think he loved that partnership just as much as we love watching it.
Absolutely, yes. The first goal comes from Careca, like you said. Maradona, pretty nice, border line foul in the box to get the ball from the Bayern defender, but does steal the ball away from the defender in the box and finds Careca storming up to the goal, slots it right to Careca on the ground. 1-0 for Napoli, but 2 minutes later, Bayern would make it 1-1. So this is where things, Napoli with a 3-0 aggregate lead, but here come Bayern Munich. They're not giving up just yet. Wolfhart gets a goal in the 63rd, so it knots things up. But then Careca would come through once again to make it 4-1 on aggregate in the 76th minute. And things seem like they are going our way, don't they?
Bayern go on to win the German League that season. So there you go. It really shows the quality of the competition. And we're into our first European final two-legged affair.
The final is here, and it is Napoli and Stuttgart. The first leg is at the San Paolo. We are in to the final, May 3rd, and the atmosphere here is bar none. I mean, you know, you can't get better than this. You've got Stuttgart, who's got an Italian-born player, Gaudino, who gets on the board for them. In the 17th, Italian. Very early. Yes, Southern Italian. Yes. Very early. But a penalty kick in the 68th minute ties it up. Maradona takes it home. And then with 4 minutes left, Napoli take the lead on Careca in the 86th. And we are leading after the first leg. Because back then, there were two legs in the final. And 2-1 is the score line. Frank, what do you think of this?
I just want to sing Reneker's praises. It's really tight. And until that 87th minute goal, it could go either way. And I'm not going to lie, everyone drops their heads apart from Reneker. And he picks us up by the scruff of the neck. And, you know, we go behind in the 18th minute. And then we don't equalise till the, 66th minute? That's a long period of time where things can go badly wrong. But Reneker makes sure it doesn't happen. His whole body language lifts the whole team. And then the final goal, he's in the 87th minute, begins with a long ball into the box from Reneker. So I think there's lots of heroes this season. But he, without him, we would not have got the result overall. And again, Bianchi's tactics are really smart. Technically, it's a 4-3-3, but we flip between that and a 5-2-3. Or maybe a 5-3-2 with Alamal going deep, Maradona going into midfield. It's, you know, due to Bianchi's tactics and Reneker's grinta, that's the thing that gets us through this game.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's still all to play for in the second leg, isn't it?
It is. 81,000 at the San Paolo for that one. But in the second leg, yeah, all to play for. Napoli have the lead going into the final. But, you know, there's still work to do. We get into the final, Stuttgart. We're talking May 17th. This is an iconic day in Napoli history. Giuliani, Ferrara, Francini, Corradini, Alemão, Reneker, Fusi, Di Napoli, Careca, Maradona, Carnevale. That's the lineup. And in the 19th minute, we get our goal started with Alemão. Careca, centro, ancora per Alemão, tiro. El pallone in gol, gol di Alemão, grande azione del Napoli, Alemão porta in vantaggio il Napoli, 19° del primo tempo, Alemão in combinazione con Maradona. Beautiful little 1-2 with Careca, a little bit of Brazilian interplay there, and the Alemão's shot squirms under the keeper to make it 1-0, what a great time to score. There seems to be loads of Napoli fans in Germany and they go absolutely nuts. But then the Germans come right back at us, don't they, Rafa? It's a real back and forth. They do. And it's that man, Jürgen Klinsmann, very, very iconic German player. He gets the goal in the 26th minute to get it back to a 3-2 aggregate scoreline. So it gives them a little bit of hope. But then the goal, one of my favorite Napoli goals.
Same here,
Ciro
man.
Ciro Ferrara. Di testa di Schäfer, ancora Maradona, dentro, gol! Gol! Gol di Ciro Ferrara! Ferrara, con gran botta, mette dentro al 39° il gol del 2-1. Grande Napoli, vedete Ferrara che non crede ai suoi occhi. E ora con una smorfia di gioia e di commozione va a rifugiarsi nell'abbraccio dei compagni. Rivediamo il tutto, c'è il tiro d'angolo di Maradona, la respinta di Schäfer, ancora il colpo di testa di Maradona, Ferrara con rabbia, gol. From a Maradona throw-in that goes back to Maradona off of a failed clearance attempt, and Maradona would head the ball into the box as a cross. It's as if he crossed it with his feet. You have to look this up. You have to watch
bullet
this
bullet-like, isn't it? It's a bullet-like.
Bullet-like header. I mean, unbelievable. And then here comes Ferrara seemingly out of nowhere with his right foot and just slots it past the keeper. And I tell you right now, if there's never a more emotional moment in Napoli history. To have a young Neapolitan score a goal as a center back in the final in that fashion, to put them ahead 2-1 in the match, is just spectacular. And Napoli seemed to be ready to lift the cup, but it wouldn't be over yet. Second half. No, go ahead. Sorry, Frank.
Just that celebration as well. It's a great photo. Do look it up. He's got his arms aloft, Ferrari. He can't quite believe it. And he's obviously very fondly thought of by his teammates, and he's completely mobbed. So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, we're 4-2 up on aggregate, but it's not over, is it? Because, you know, the Germans are really, really coming at us.
It's not over. And here's a goal in the... to 61st minute, another really good goal. It seems like this was a similar goal to the match, not the first leg, but the round previous, so where Maradona and Careca pretty much had a had a two-man counterattack going. Yeah. A clearance found Maradona, just him one-on-one with one of the defenders, and you know, instead of being selfish as he hasn't been at all at any point in the season, he finds Careca coming. And how nobody can mark this guy coming is beyond me. But Maradona finds Careca, and Careca puts it home for the third goal of the night and basically puts away the fixture. Surely, you can see in their celebration, they just know at this point, that's it. Even with 30 minutes left of the match.
And then there's a bit of comedic things that happen afterwards. We've got some terrible defending for the German, the Stuttgart team get one back. It sort of bounces off Di Napoli just in front of Giuliani. Why on earth Di Napoli stood there? I don't know. Maybe he's planning his celebrations. I don't know. It goes in. And then the goal afterwards is one of the worst things I've ever seen. Poor old Di Napoli again. I mean, he really was. It's Di Napoli with that back pass, right?
Yes, it's Di Napoli with the back pass, yeah.
Yeah, for the right at the end. And it's then headed home. And it is one of the worst pieces of defending I think I've ever seen in my life. But who cares, man? Because we are champions. Isn't that great?
La vittoria in Coppa UEFA va al Napoli ed è una vittoria che viene ora sanzionata dal fischio finale dell'arbitro Ottavio Bianchi. Vedete, complimentato da tutti, mentre i giocatori del Napoli si abbracciano e sugli spalti c'è un tripudio di vestigli azzurri. Il Napoli conquista la Coppa UEFA, scrive il suo nome in Europa. Lo dei napoletani. Ma il Napoli vince la Coppa UEFA. È una grande soddisfazione, vedete Moggi, vedete Diego Armando Maradona abbracciato dal...
It's our first taste of European glory. And as I said when we opened this, this is something that Maradona wanted to do. You know, he wanted to win a national trophy with a club. I really feel like he needed this trophy to cement his legacy with Napoli. It was one of the reasons I believe he stayed after all the controversy in the summertime with Bianchi choosing, you know, with the fans kind of siding Bianchi over the players, and you know, him kind of getting... Him and Bianchi never really got on very, very well, but to be honest with you, I don't think any of it really mattered because they won a lot, they won their trophies, and at the final whistle here, you could just tell that the players are so relieved and overwhelmed with joy.
Dropping to their knees, Ferrara looks like a kid, he's got the candy. And the press mobbing around Maradona, but Maradona does his best to get out of the way of the press and celebrate with his teammates, and that's where he's also a great captain, and something we talked about before, but he was a fantastic captain of this team. You know,
the way he embraces Ferrara in the you know, in the mob of the press is so emotional. Fabregas is to his knees, can't contain himself, crying, and all Maradona wants to do is hug him while the press asks him questions on how he feels. And
guarda che l'abbiamo sognato questo, siamo qui in realtà.
Vedo che anche Ferrara, anche Ciro piano.
Ciruccio è napoletano, lui se lo merita più di tutti. Noi abbiamo fatto qualcosa, ma lui ha fatto gol, ha fatto una grandissima partita.
It's an amazing moment, amazing.
And, you know, so many goals from Kareka. He's a real hero of the campaign. You know, Ferrara, Reneke, Francini with key goals, but also Giuliani, the goalkeeper, really kept us in it loads of times over the course of the campaign. You know, and I was saying to you before, Rafa, that if anyone wants to get their head around the Maradona era, just watching the highlights of our European campaign here is a great way to get into it. And there's a really lovely sort of narrative that builds and the atmosphere there. And I felt really emotional, actually, at the end of this, even though I knew what was going to happen. Just seeing how much it meant to the players, I think, really rubbed off on me. So, yeah, it's been great. I think maybe we'll go into a bit more detail on the stats and stuff in the next pod when we look at the League and Cup season.
Yes,
as well.
we can get a little bit more in depth in the off season and in the League and Cup and all the statistics next time we record, which should be a week from today. But we hope you enjoyed part one of the 1988-89 season, a season where we lift another trophy and this one legitimizes us in Europe. Frank Sidekick, I'm Rafa Rispo. We'll see you all next week. Forza Napoli.
Sempre.
Ferlaino in questo abbraccio con Maradona, che naturalmente ha significati che vanno al di là di quello che è il momento puntuale, praticamente significano anche la permanenza di Diego Armando Maradona a Napoli. Ed ecco la Coppa UEFA alzata al cielo da Maradona e dai suoi compagni, mentre con un pizzico di invidia i giocatori del Stoccarda guardano questo momento di straordinaria festa da parte dei napoletani. Il Napoli conquista la Coppa UEFA.
So there you have it, folks. Diego Maradona has led Napoli to the UEFA Cup. Napoli's first ever UEFA Cup, Napoli's first major European title, and only major European title from 1989. And what a year that was. Again, we will record part two, where we will run across the Serie A and the Coppa Italia of that season, as we usually do on these Maradona Chronicles. I thought I would take this time to say a few words, though, about what Maradona means to me. To me, Diego was not just another footballer, and he was not only a member of the Napoli family, but he was a member of every Neapolitan family around the globe, and including mine. Diego Maradona is the reason that I'm a football fan. I'm blessed to have been alive during this time. A lot of people that I've spoken to, you know, great people, Calcio guys included. I went on their podcast the day he passed, and, you know, they are too young to have seen Maradona, or some fans have, you know, become fans during the ADL era, and they don't, you know, they've seen the videos and they might know what it means to, you know, to Napoli fans. And a lot of people live that emotion and, you know, are mourning as well. But if, you know, I'll say something that, you know, people said when Maradona brought home the first Scudetto, you know, the There was the banners across the, you know, cemeteries and memorials of those who have gone. And they said, you know, it says you don't know what you were missing, you know, and, you know, I'm lucky, like I said, I'm blessed to have been alive during his time, and lucky for my first memories of this sport that we love so much, football, to have been him. You know, in the grand scheme of things, football, it's just a sport. You know, to many of us, though, in certain cases, it's much more than just a sport. This sport, and more importantly, Diego Maradona himself, is the connection that I have with my dad to this day. My dad and I, you know, he's still with us, and when we speak on the phone or see each other, it's always a discussion about Napoli, and more likely than not, Diego comes up in conversation as well. It's very emotional for me because I always cry when I watch the videos of the first Scudetto. It's something that I don't remember as a baby, but it's something that I have this video, and I watch it a lot, and I cry all the time. And as a 3-year-old, 4 at that time actually, I remember very, very little of that. But I remember like flashes of it in my brain, the first Scudetto. You know, I remember his hair. I remember the short shorts, and I remember how short he was, and I remember, you know, I just remember certain flashes of Diego in my life as a baby. You know, I remember it. But I cry every time I watch that video of the first Scudetto, because it's something that means a lot to me. Because I know that this is what I was watching with my father as a baby. And I got really emotional in the 86-87 podcast I did with Frank, and I'm getting emotional now too. I cry as I remember as a seven-year-old. Celebrating the second Scudetto in the Bronx with my father and my uncle and my cousin and friends, you know, and there were a lot of Neapolitans in New York back then, and there were a lot of people who I'll never forget going. I mean, we were at a cafe called Cafe Aurora in the Bronx, which is mostly a Portuguese cafe, but we had our Italian friends, and you know, we all got together to watch games there. And Napoli Lazio, I'll never forget. I had to stand up for it, but was so excited to see, I believe it was Baroni who scored the free kick, and we'll get into that in the next, you know, part two is coming up of 88-89, but in 89-90, we'll get into that. But I remember that. And Maradona leading the way. And, you know, I also cry when, you know, I think of when I watch Diego's return to Napoli in 2005 for Ciro Ferrara's testimonial at the San Paolo, and that was emotional for me because I just missed that. I was in Naples in 05, and you know, had I been there, a couple of months earlier, or later, excuse me, I would have been there for that. And, but knowing that I, you know, got to walk on the San Paolo with my father, walk in the spogliatoi, go up the steps that he came up, you know, watching that testimonial when I did back in 05, things came full circle. He walked up those steps in 1984 to a full San Paolo. It wasn't even a match. It was just an unveiling. And in 2005, it wasn't even his moment. It was Chito Ferrara's testimonial. And I'll never forget watching Diego round San Paolo and the fans just singing and chanting for Diego, and even Ferrara on the microphone chanting for Diego. And Ferrara, such a great sport, because everybody was there for Diego Maradona. It was his first return to Naples since he left in 91. And everybody was there to see Diego Maradona for Chito Ferrara's testimonial. But they all knew. They all knew what he meant to the fans, and they knew what he meant to the city of Naples. And he knew. They all knew. So there was no jealousy that day. There was no envy. There was nothing like that. But on the flip side, Diego, you have to look it up on YouTube. Chito Ferrara's testimonial, or Diego returns to Naples. He would literally shove reporters and journalists and photographers out of the way. He wanted no part of any of that, because his own words, "I'm here for Chito and I'm here for the people." Diego wasn't this guy that people perceived him to be. All his judges out there. He was judged for so many things, and unfairly. He was a peculiar individual. He made decisions in his life that took that some look at him in disdain for. He made decisions that I would never make or teach any of my kids to make. But I've made decisions in my life that I regret. Who am I to judge? You all have too. You've all made decisions in your life that you regret. We all have. It's part of life. To his peers and his friends and his family, he was a beautiful man who they loved so much. And he loved in return. He did things for kids that nobody wants to talk about, and the needy, they'd rather judge him for the demons that he fought against. But seeing the tears and the outpouring of love from not only mere fans like myself, but from those who he played against, lets you know that he was so loved. He came to Napoli and showed so much love to the city, and has become part of the culture that he brought the city alive. He showed us how to love. And that's how I'll remember Diego Armando Maradona. Adios to the greatest of all time. And thank you. Napoli will never forget you. And I certainly won't forget you either. Rest in peace, Diego Armando Maradona. Ciao.